All right, we are here. We are Galexis and welcome. Welcome to Healing and Managing Your Emotions. We want to begin with the ultimate emotion. That's love. Love is everything. Love is what God is and what love is God and God is love. And the way back to God, your path, your spiritual path is all about love. Now that love, by your choice, choosing to come into the material world, needs to be crafted, stepped down, vibrationally shifted, lowered, and split into an infinitude of vibrations and frequencies, which constitute your material plane. Now, in this material plane, you can still feel love. But since everything is love, even the substance of your soul, what makes up your soul is love. You are love. Then everything you experience, positive or negative, is still love, as ironic as that may seem. So the whole creation is one of love. And you came from the spiritual realms into physical material matter, and you forgot who you were so that you could create from scratch, so you could be inventive and creative and explore free will in this particular universe. This is not done in necessarily in other universes, but in this one, you are also at a place of learning about your free will, learning how to be who you are, learning how to love more and more. And the way that you want to define yourself on your spiritual path home is through your capacity to love, your capacity to feel love, own love, and identify with love. Now, love, as it percolates down into the material realm, holds a resonance of unconditional acceptance, what everybody yearns for, because in the material plane, there's all sorts of manipulations, there's all sorts of games, there's all sorts of dualities and duplicities on things like that. And so growing up, you're always wanting and yearning for that divine nature to be expressed through your parents, through family, through community, through your religious group, through your educational process. You're looking for that unconditional love. Unfortunately, for virtually everyone, and this is also part of your experience that you chose, you don't get it. It's up to you to discover how to fully and totally accept yourself and love yourself. Your path back to the divine, your path of ascension, your path of spiritual development is always expanding your self-image, the identity and image of yourself as that loving being. And the more you love, the more godlike you become. The more divine you can identify with, the more you can manifest whatever it is that you desire. The more divine you can claim yourself to be, the healthier and more vital and more prosperous, and all those good material things just come naturally to higher vibration. This is part of what is often referred to as the law of attraction. So it's very important for you. It's of critical, urgent importance to expand your self-image. And we have already done a seminar on self-image. And if you want to work on deliberately expanding that, you can access that seminar. The second part of expanding your self-image is loving yourself so unconditionally and loving others so unconditionally that you lift into the state of bliss, the state of unconditional love, the state of divine connection. Everybody's after this, even if they don't know it. Even if it's buried down in their unconscious mind, they're wanting to go there. So what we suggest here is that there are ways along the way where you can shift and move and tweak the energies of your reality, the energies of your life, all by yourself. You don't need to depend on anyone else to do it for you. It's something that you, as a spiritual being, have inherently as your right to do. And that is to work with all the stuff, all the pieces that were split off from love, all the pieces that look dark, that look light, all these pieces, to learn how to move into the light more and more, to move into the love. Now, when you came down into the physical plane, you wanted to explore everything. You wanted to do everything. You wanted to just really have every experience you could. And you got hooked into experiencing pain and suffering. You got hooked into experiencing limiting emotions and feeling trapped and working with other people to fighting and or playing or trying to find your way back to that unconditional love. In that process of exploring all the dark side, which fascinated the dickens out of you, and you got a little over-obsessed with it, so here you are, but you're working your way back. But you did go as far as you could go from owning your divine nature. And that furthest place in the illusion of all this temporary stuff, the playground with all the stuff of creation, that furthest away point is shame. When you feel shame, you feel unworthy. You feel like you're a divine mistake of God. You feel inadequate. It's not just feeling insecure. You feel like you're a failure. You feel that there is no value about you whatsoever. In shame, you feel tremendous exclusion, separation. You feel the pain of rejection and isolation. Shame is as far as you can get in the illusion. But it's so painful that you'll do most anything in your life rather than to go and experience that head on and directly. Now, you got shamed. Everybody gets shamed early in your life. Throughout your adolescence is and early adulthood is where you get the master load of it. It comes into anchoring into you, anchoring down deep inside you. And shame is another state of being. It's another place of identity. So if you can identify with the divine, you can be in a state of bliss and unconditional love, of divine love. If you go fully for the illusion into the darkness, you'll end up in the state of love, of a state of shame. The state limiting, the most limiting and the most isolated place. Now, shame itself is such a huge big deal because it marks your growth. It gives you your traumas. It does all these things on your path and through your life that force you, in a sense, to look at the boundaries you have between you and the divine. So it serves a useful purpose, but it's in a culture that is dedicated to ignoring it, running away from it, not seeing it, you generally don't learn how to get out of it. You don't learn how to reconnect to the divine, and you have to work through your emotions. Now, all of the emotions that you feel are in between the divine love state and the shame state. There is a spectrum. And in the spectrum from light to dark, you have all the emotions. And by the time you're about 7 or 8 years of age, you've felt all the emotions. Now, emotions themselves, however, are not states. They don't hold the resonance of identity. You don't identify with your fear or your anger or your hurt. You identify with shame if you're feeling totally unworthy and useless. But you can identify with the divine, identify as a God being with love. What we're going to do this time is we're not going to talk about and work with releasing shame. We're going to do another seminar specifically devoted to that. So this time, what we're going to do is we're going to discuss all that's in between. We're going to discuss emotions. Now, emotions are energy in motion. Emotions are part of your flow. Emotions are responses, reactions, orientations that you perceive and respond to. They involve action, either releasing them, expressing them, or perhaps in some way or another, channeling the energy of them into something. You always need to utilize the energy, tremendous energy of emotions. One of the amazing things about children that are healthy is that they're filled with energy. Their energy goes on and on and on and on. And it's like emotions are like that too. The emotions have got to go on and on and on. And people watch with amazement at how the child responds to emotional frustrations, with anger, with fear. They're very obvious. The child reacts immediately, crying or hollering or beating fists or in the terrible twos or whatever it is. You can see these dramatic responses. Those are emotions being moved. That is energy in motion. But as you grow up, you get more sophisticated and you realize you get into a lot of hot water, a lot of trouble if you keep expressing your emotions, especially if you express them like a child. People laugh at you and you will continue to feel powerless and not know what you can do about anything. But as you grow up and mature, you realize that you've got to do something about your emotions. Because if you don't, your emotions kind of get stuck in you. And when emotions get stuck inside you, they turn toxic. You see, you have this judgment about emotions. If it's fear, anger, or hurt, it's considered that those are negative emotions. But really, they're not. It depends on how they're used. If you use your anger positively, it becomes a force of will, for free will, for passionate enthusiasm. And you can get a lot of great things accomplished or move a lot of positive energy and feel blissful about it even if you use your anger wisely. If you use your fear correctly, then you know how to protect yourself, how to shift things, where to go, what's right, what's okay, what's not, what's dangerous, what's good, and so forth. And in the moment of your fear, if it's a real authentic fear, not just a worry type of ongoing thing, if it's an immediate fear, It puts you into fight or flight, into that sympathetic nervous system program. It's intended to make your senses alert, to make you really clear about what you're doing, and to be really clear about how to navigate and how to avoid danger. But, of course, the way nature set it up, you're supposed to, you address the issue, you save your ass, and then you're on the other side, and the fear goes away. But that's a healthy fear. That's the way fear is intended. When you're angry and you have a situation where you're angry and you get your anger out and you express it and you set your boundaries and you get clear about how you want to deal with, in an empowered way, the obstacle that you're facing, you're using your anger in a positive way. And therefore, it is a positive emotion. It is moving. It does not hurt you in any way. In fact, it's rather rejuvenating. However, if you start getting stuck in fear or stuck in anger, then you've got problems, because when you hold on to it or chew on it, it creates distortions in your whole emotional body. It creates distortions in all your responses and reactions. It creates a lot of issue with ego, and it gets your ego all riled up trying to control or dominate or somehow or another fix everything and to make everything safe and happy and peaceful again, but through control. And unfortunately, that doesn't ever work. So you end up just controlling yourself with your emotion, and it sticks inside you. Or it goes into it poisons your environment. It poisons your work life, your love life, your health. It poisons everything. It becomes toxic. Now, hurt is also that same way. Hurt is a bit more physical than fear and anger. Fear and anger can be processed like poof, do 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 do, and it's out of your body and it's out of your system, and you can recover very, very nicely because you can move that energy quickly. But as you've noticed, when you're in the physical plane, you've got this thing called time, and there's some kind of unfoldment or involvement, and so therefore, when you feel hurt, you know, you get bogged down in the physical, and your body has to heal along with it. Fear and anger, you can process mentally, emotionally, whoof, it's out. But hurt goes directly to the body. When someone diminishes you, someone attacks you in the most cruel way, someone pulls the rug out from under you, someone rejects you, someone hits your sore spot and sticks a knife in there and digs it around. That, when that person goes and hits the part of you perhaps still resonating to shame, the hurt gets stuck in the body very quickly. You can feel it. You know, when someone rejects you, you feel heart pain. You feel you have a broken heart. That's very physical, really, in a way. If you have your power taken away from you, you can feel it as if someone punched you in the gut. But hurt, you have to take care of it by ritual and process. We're going to get into that just a little bit later. But what we want to say, though, is that in this continuum between that state of being of divine nature and the shame down here, in the lowest and furthest vibration from the divine that you could possibly create in the illusion, shame is also stuck in your body. So your healing process is going to be over your lifetime of getting out the shame. And many of you have already done a lot of work towards these by building your valued self, by building your self-esteem, your love, your and value of yourself, by accepting yourself, forgiving yourself. All of this helps and it enables you to spend a lot of time in this in-between zone, which is what we want to focus on, in which in your day-to-day life, you're able to respond in such a way to keep the flow going, to keep the flow going towards the divine, keep the flow going up into the light, okay, into the divine realms, into the transcendent realms. If you can manage your fear, your anger, and your hurt in your daily life, you can find a way to thrive. You can get it to a vibratory frequency that is above the limitations that sometimes you think of the reality around you, the limitations of your environment. You think that those are written in stone, but they may not be. Now, you've compensated tremendously well. You've done so much to deal with this whole emotional boondoggle when you get into it and clearing it out and expressing and releasing and so on. You've done so much there. And so we want to clear the path between the shame and the divine so that when you lift out of the shame, you can go right on up. And then what that does is that rolls up all the limitations of the material physical plane. And when you don't have limitations in the physical plane, my gosh, is life fun. Well, it can be fun anyway, but it is amazingly magical, amazingly miraculous. And of course, that's what we wish for you. So we want to talk a little bit about these three emotions and what you can do about them. Okay, to start with, we're going to start with fear because that was the one that generally puts everybody into when they feel fear or when they imbibe fear and hold on to fear. They're always in this survival place, this fight, flight, or freeze place. Now, the sympathetic nervous system, which is the one to protect you from the saber-toothed tiger thing, okay, that one has the fight, flight, or freeze options. And fear will move you into one of those three, depending on your temperament, okay? If you're frightened about something, you are going to either fight, which means you're going to try to control, dominate, bully, push back, resist, etc. And you mobilize yourself and you push and drive yourself to deal with it. And that's why very often when people feel powerless, if they can take action towards something, this really works. This works well to kind of assuage that fight pattern of the fight, flight, or freeze. Now, the flight, most people are aware of that. The flight is, okay, I'm going to avoid this. I'm going to avoid this like the plague. I'm going to not talk about it. I'm going to run away. I'm not going to call that person back. I'm not going to deal with it. I'm just not going to deal with it. If I could just run away and put my attention somewhere else, maybe it'll go away. But still, there's pressure. It hangs and looms like a vulture over you. And so if you fall for the flight, then you end up with panics, anxiety, a lot of intestinal disturbances, and so forth. Well, both anger and fear, if you are responding to them in the fight, flight, or freeze response, the fight response ends up with high blood pressure. It's like, I haven't done enough, I've got to do more. Now, we've talked about Slave Driver in other seminars. We recommend that you go and listen to that if you want more depth about it. But the inner slave driver is the one that pushes you by guilt or fear. It can push you by anger, too. Guilt is actually a convoluted anger. Guilt is an anger you don't really feel that you have a right to have. You're pissed, but you can't say anything because if you did, well, you would just look stupid, or you don't know how to do it without it being immature and ineffective. So you hold on to it, and that becomes guilt. That's not a healthy guilt. There is a healthy guilt, but that's not the one. And this guilt, or the fear about what could happen, the fear and the anger together end up putting a person in a place where they feel powerless, and they're looking at their life and, oh my God, how am I going to deal with this? And they can feel overloaded, and they can get high blood pressure, they can get high blood sugar, they can get the anxiety or the panic, or they can get into temperamental rages and act out and rebel and act like a jerk or basically become manipulative or whatever. This is when it get, that's an emotion. Those are emotions that are dark because they're activating the survival complex. Okay. Now, the freeze response. The freeze response is still fear, and it can also still be tremendous rage and anger. However, the freeze response shows up in the body as very, very sluggish, very slow metabolism. This doesn't mean that the person cannot move quickly. It just means that the systems of the body kind of shut down. The heart rate is slow. The blood pressure is low. Sometimes the blood sugar is low. It's just the adrenal fatigue, the tired, and wanting to just kind of crawl away into some hidden spot and hide. Because the freeze response is, if I just shut down, then the stress will pass over. And I'll just wait until the stress is over. It's like the little baby deer knows how to freeze and sits completely immobile, barely breathing, for hours at a time. And the channel watched one of those nature shows where it shows a lion, who normally would eat that fawn, come up to the fawn who's frozen. And the fawn is not moving. And the lion sniffs it. And walks away. Why? Because nature has created this message to the lion, to the predators, that they're only going to be predators and kill and eat if the thing is moving. So as long as the fawn is totally still, then the lion doesn't eat it, or the jackal or whatever. It'll just pass by. As soon as the fawn starts moving, it's available, and it can get eaten. So the freeze response, however, creates a tremendous amount of long-term physical tiredness and weakness issues. And the fawn, when it gets out of its freeze, it goes and it shakes itself and it vibrates and kind of shakes itself and so on. And then it goes right back to normal as if it never did freeze. But humans, when they get into the freeze response, and there they are cowering, saying, okay, I'll come out when the stress is over. And then the stress never is perceived to be over. People can spend years never feeling like they have enough energy or enough motivation. There's no motivation there. There's no oomph. There's no passion, and so on. And they can spend years and decades in that space, some part of themselves waiting for the stress to pass over. And of course, living in this world, there's you just don't get breaks, real true breaks. Now you can go out and live in the wilderness and so on, or you can go to retreat, and you can just be there, and nobody will bother you, and so on. Maybe you can tiptoe out of there for a little bit, but overall, the fight, flight, or freeze pattern is embedded in your body. And so when you get the anger and the fear and the hurt energies, this basically tells your limbic brain, your sympathetic nervous system gets kicked in, that it's dangerous, that there's stress, and you have to deal with the stress however you deal with the stress. And holding on to any emotion for any length of time, it turns toxic. It can make you sick. It can create so many games that you play with other people that you lose ultimately, and so much manipulation. But think of it this way too: is that you're raised with all these pressures on you to be way. The men are generally raised in such a way that they're pressured. They've got to make money. They've got to provide. They've got to succeed. They've got to achieve. The women are pressured. You've got to sacrifice yourself for the love of others. You've got to take care of other people. You've got to be available. You've got to always put other people first. And this is the traditional man code and good girl training we've talked about before. And this does not help anyone deal with their emotions. So what do you do when you feel fear or hurt or anger? What do you do? Now, you spent so much time. Now, maybe you've done a lot of processing and you don't remember this too well. But if you think back, there was a time where you didn't want to deal with any emotions at all. They were just bad news. It was such bad news, and so people were so unable to deal with their emotions that this is where you get all this whole thing with the ETs. There's a whole race of ETs that bred themselves to be clear and free of emotion. And so they don't have emotion themselves. They just react to others' emotions. They're pretty robotic, okay? And they've recognized the problem and their need. And this is what a whole subculture is around, how the ETs are coming and getting human eggs and sperm and creating, creating blends of various sorts with humans and various types of ETs to kind of develop an ET, one without the incredible powerful capacities of an ET, but with some of that emotional stuff of humans. Because even though it seems like a liability at times, it is actually the most beautiful and most wonderful thing that you have in your life, is to be able to feel. If you don't feel, then your thinking is distorted and twisted and it'll never go anywhere. If you don't feel, then you don't have any orientation to your life. You don't know what to do. You don't know how to read anything. Your intuition goes missing too. Now, we admit that there are people whose emotions are being controlled. And there's quite a bit like in political groups, controlled to be always angry and fighting, right? So those emotions are not being released. They're not being processed. They're just reacting to an imprinted survival mechanism that they must fight and attack. They don't see where it's going to lead. They just are mobilized to do it. So that's where you have your terrorists, and you have the extremists who are willing to do violence, but they are willing, not willing, and they have no clue on how to offer any options or solutions or how to negotiate anything. But you, as a human being, as a spiritual person on your path, you see through that type of stuff. But you still can have problems dealing with anger, fear, and hurt. So we're going to take them, these three. These are what we consider the three major categories of what are considered by most people to be negative emotions or limiting emotions, or where you can limit yourself, because you don't tend to limit yourself when you're in bliss. You don't tend to limit yourself when you're really in passionate enthusiasm. You don't tend to limit yourself there when you're in joy. Okay, and that's an expansive emotion. It's about the emotions that you get can get caught up into contracting into. That takes them down into smaller you, less love, down in the shame direction. Okay, so that's why we're going to deal with those three. We're going to start out with anger. Anger usually shows up when something is in your way, between you and what you want. When you're being resisted, when you're being blocked, if you're being lied to, if you're being undermined, manipulated, it is your right to be angry. It is a good response. If someone's taking advantage of you, mistreating you, judging you, that's all cause to be angry. And you can encounter it in your daily life. You know, the channel used to be very, very active and busy and talked to a lot of people every day, and she had clients every day and all that kind of stuff. And she went places, did things, very busy in her life. And she, by the end of the day, she would look at all the people she had interacted with, and she found she was angry at every one of them for different reasons or whatever, but somehow or another, every person would seem to raise her ire, you know? And so if you want to see where you're angry, just look at where you're frustrated, where you're impatient, where you're aggravated, irritated, annoyed, disgusted. These are kind of energies that go into the anger category. And you may think, oh, it's just a little frustration, nothing big. But no, it is an anger. You've just diminished it in your mind so that you're not going to deal with it. You're just going to let the little ones go, little ones go. Okay, if there's a big one, I guess I'll have to deal with it. But you let the little ones go. But after a while, if you notice, the little ones pile up. And when they pile up, after they pile up, they get big toxic load in you. So that's why some people, and it's kind of common for guys. In fact, Daniel's father, who was a a head person at a factory. And it would pile up and pile up and pile up. And once or twice a year, he would just go into a rage and he would just scream and holler and tell everybody off. But the rest of the year, he was, you know, he's easygoing, workable. They did what you did. So a lot of people have that in relationships, that they're in the relationships and the frustrations. Okay, that's a little thing. Okay, that's a little thing. Just an annoyance. Okay, forget it. Okay, no big deal. Okay, no big deal. Don't have to process that. That's okay. But after a while, it gets too much. And then some little stupid thing happens and you blow. And you yell and scream, and this has happened, and that happened. You go back for maybe months about all the things that happened, and oh, how angry, blah, 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 and maybe you'd be judging and attacking and so on and going into the fight response or whatever. But, and of course, that often destroys relationships. How many relationships survive lots of fighting? How many relationships can thrive when the people in the relationship are competing and fighting and attacking or holding it in, and then surprising the other one, just blowing their mind by going kaboom on them? Because if you're in a relationship with somebody who does not express any emotion, there will come a point at where they will surprise you at how angry they have been, how upset at you they've been for who knows how long, that they have not, that you had no idea. Why? Because you're busy not feeling your emotions either. As we say, it kind of messes up intuition. So what do you do? Now, generally, anger comes through the venue of a person, of an individual. Now, you can be angry at government, too. And we would suggest that there is a person who stands in the position of representing government, whereas in the U.S. it's like the president. And so if you're angry at the government, then the head of the government, the president, may be the target of your anger. But you do need to select a target, and that target is probably a person. And in fact, it needs to be a person. If it's a circumstance, if it's a rage about how life is on planet Earth, you still need to get an individual to represent it. If you're angry at terrorists, then you get, you know, you don't know any terrorists personally. Okay. Yeah, some people that you may have known might have, quote unquote, terrorized you a little bit, but it wasn't quite so aggravating. But you're really angry at these terrorists. Okay, so you take and put together kind of a composite individual that you label the terrorist. And you make them look just, you know, just like what you think a terrorist should look like. You make it a good stereotype of a terrorist, right? And then you direct your anger at that. And you do this process, the anger release process. The anger release process means that you take that, in your imagination, you take that person, and you imagine that you're facing that person, either standing or sitting, but generally standing, you're facing that person. And you are angry at that person and what they represent. And so you tell them off. You tell them off and you tell them off and you tell them off. And you get it all out. You express it as much as you can in meditation. Then you want to get the anger out of your body. See, that gets it out of your mind, okay, and your non-physical self. That gets it. And studies have shown that if you visualize something, then your system, even your body thinks, okay, then that must have happened. You know, if you've had a dream where you did something and you met some kind of person and so on, and you wake up in the morning and it's so real that for a second you think, oh, when did I do that? I actually met that person. I know that person. Oh, no, I don't. Because it had that sense of attachment of the image of what it means to that person. And that made it real in your mind. Okay, so once you get it out, once you express it in your mind, you can scream and holler. And what's great is that when you do it in meditation, it doesn't hurt your throat, right? But you want to get it out of your body. You want to tell your body that you've actually got it out. So what you do is a fight response. What you do is you go up and you hit them and you slap them and you kick them and you start beating them up and you keep telling them off while you slap and kick and beat. And sometimes you can get a baseball bat and beat them up. Sometimes you can just, you know, use lasers. you know, lightsabers, whatever you want to do, right? And you play with it to where your body feels it. You are getting it out. You're beating them up. It's coming out through your muscles, just like you're exercising at a gym. You're working it out, working it out. Now, if you go to a gym, you can do a lot of anger release by just deliberately adding that onto your workouts, right? So you get it out and say, okay, I'm going to be doing this rowing, and this is me, you know, I'm getting all my anger out at so-and-so. And you could do that. So anyway, the point is that you get back to that beating them up, and then you just get all the rest of the anger as you can, let it just surge, and just throw it at them and let them blow up. And then keep blowing up, blow them 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 up, until there's a feeling like, okay, done. The image of that person has been blown up. Now, the first response we get from a lot of people when we tell them this process is that they say, but I don't want to hurt anybody. You can, you know, it's generally the good girls that say that. Oh my gosh, that's so unspiritual, which they've been taught as good girls. You never get angry. That's bad, right? So what we're saying here is that anger is good. And when you feel your anger and you really hold the anger and you really let it go, it's got to feel good. It's not going to hurt whoever that person is. It's just not. Why? Because the intention behind what you're doing is not to really hurt the real person, but to clear the image of the person and to get your anger out at that person and be clear with that person. This is such an important thing, and it takes courage to do this. Courage and willingness to do this. Now, this technique was originally shared with us and many others in Lazarus seminars. There's incredible resources on all the details, the shades, the nuances of emotion in a lot of the work that Lazarus put out in the 1980s. And so... if you want to go into various nuances, you would go there. We do a lot of work with the nuances of emotion in private sessions. And the nuances of emotion would be, okay, what is a spiritual message about it? What changes is this going to make in you? And what changes do you want to make once you get this anger out? Where are you going to put your passion? Where are you going to put your energy positively? What is your will? You want to process that. In your daily life, you don't have the time to sit down and write out and meditate and do all these processes and so on. You want something that's quick. And this is quick. In fact, if you work in an office with a bunch of other people or something, and you're in a meeting and they do stuff, makes you really, but of course you're not allowed to really get outraged and angry at the meeting. It's not appropriate, and you don't want to get fired or whatever. So what you do is that at your first break, mentally make a choice. At your first break, you go to the bathroom, and you go into a stall, close a door, and you do it in there. You do this whole process. It takes, 5 minutes? To do, and it clears it out. Now, at the end of doing an anger release and blowing them up, you then feel that the space is opened up in you, that there's nothing there anymore. The space is there, and so what you then do is you feel a little free and maybe a little floaty and a little disoriented because you got out a big load, okay? And so that's a good sign that you got stuff out. It's off your chest. So what you do next then is you bring the person back. And you have them stand in front of you again. And this time, you understand it from their point of view. You understand that they are doing whatever they need to do for themselves, that they may be in survival mode, and so they need to fight, flight, or freeze, or whatever they need to do in their life, and however they're trying to function, they're making the choice to do whatever seems to be the best choice for them at the moment. And recognize a lot of people on the planet don't have many good choices. They just don't. They don't have a choice to go to a therapist or a seminar about emotions. They don't even know that they can maybe get one of our seminars or something and go through some processes. They don't even know that. There's nobody around that even says it's possible. They're stuck in this place of having to deal with it without any mentors about it and without seeing any examples of people who know how to do this. So in that case, they can only choose what seems to be the least painful or stressful choice. The least stressful choice may be beating you up, attacking you, or rejecting you. Because the other choice might be, maybe I'm going to have to face my shame. Ooh, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to blame it on somebody else. And then I'll attack them. I'll judge them. I don't want to go to the shame place. That's too dark, too scary. And if I go down there, I may never come back. I will die there. My soul will die. I'll be abandoned by God. I'll be bereft of everything. That may be their only other option. You never know. Even amongst educated people, a lot of education has absolutely no information on handling emotions and negotiating skills. It's unfortunate, but that's the way it can be. So when you get to this point, you've got to understand that they're making a selfish choice for themselves of what seems to be the least painful choice for them. And knowing that, it's not that they hate you. They're not really hating you. They're lashing out maybe at you, or maybe they're judging you as a way to cope with whatever's going on in them. Now, it's sad when people who should be mature do this kind of stupid stuff, even worse when they're heads of government and heads of state. However, you don't have to be at the mercy of these people. You can forgive them now. You can recognize they're doing what they think they've got to do. And so you forgive them. You say, okay, our slate is clean. It is clear. At this point, we can begin again, or we can just call it quits. Now, calling it quits requires that person is not in your life anymore. In other words, calling it quits is, for example, if you're clearing up all the crap that happened between you and your father, for example, and you get it all out and you forgive your father, you can't really begin again with your father. You're clear. It's okay. Everything's all right now. So basically, you put your relationship to rest if you're not going to see the person again. But an ongoing thing like the terrorist we talked about, releasing your rage and anger and whatever and blowing up the terrorist, you're clear, you've forgiven the terrorist, whatever. Not that you condone anything that the terrorist has done or condone anything that anybody has done to you or anyone else. It's not about condoning. It's not about accepting and approving of them. What the forgiveness is about, though, is letting go of your attachment to the judgment of them. And it's so, the forgiveness is mainly to free you. Yes, you free them, but in freeing them, you're freeing you. Because when you free somebody, you let go of any karmic attachment chains that bind you. So either you clear it and you say, our slate is clean, now we can begin again, and you begin from scratch. Now you're wiser knowing how to deal with the person, but at the same time, you're not holding their past against them anymore. You're allowing them to be different. You're allowing yourself to feel free in relationship to them. That's huge. Now, if you want them to change, if you, oh, but they've got to change. They're bad people. They got to change. Then you're not clear. That's not, the slate is not clear. You need to go through, beat them up and blow them up again, forgive them again. Do it as many times as needed until you get to the place where you don't feel that they need to be punished. They need to be hurt. They need to be punished. They need to be stopped. They need to be jailed. They need to be whatever. They're forgiven. Your slate is clean. Now, they may be con men, con artists, okay? You know that that's what they do. They con. Now you're going to be smart and you're not going to fall for it anymore. If they're still in your life, you have to interact with them. You're free still. You're smart. You know what to do. You're not pulled in by their manipulations. But if you're not seeing them anymore, then you put them to rest. And by putting them to rest, you take them to, this is also part of the Lazarus process, you can take them to a beautiful garden with a fountain and flowers and butterflies and a beautiful tree and a bench under the tree and just, oh, how wonderful. Maybe a babbling brook instead of a fountain, maybe a beautiful forest, maybe a beautiful meadow, whatever. And take them to this beautiful place. And you sit them down there and say, now, I'm to lay this relationship to rest. It's done now. It's done. I'll let you go. We're done. I send you. I wish you well with love. And I'm going to be on my way now. Bye-bye. Don't come to my life. Don't come into my mind and my life anymore. In your, even in the memory. Don't just be. Let it be. It's going to be gone. All I can remember now of you is that you existed, that you are. I'm free. And you say goodbye, and you walk away. And you leave them there. If you ever want to, or feel like you want to process anything or remember anything positive about it, because, heck, the reason that you were in that relationship, there was always something positive you were wanting out of the relationship. Otherwise, you would have, you know, it would have been different. You know, in a parental relationship, you wanted the unconditional love. In a business partner, you wanted them to carry more of the load. You wanted them to be more responsible. In a personal love relationship, you wanted them to love you. You wanted to work in and live a particular lifestyle, a particular way that they didn't follow through on. You wanted their integrity. You wanted their commitment, and maybe it's not there. So you don't want these energies still thinking about these energies milling around in you, creating potential stress projected into the future for you to run into again. You want to clear stuff so the patterns that you have in relationships and in circumstances clears. And that's what clearing anger does amazingly well. And it frees you. It can free you from all sorts of physical stuff as well. It can free you from addictions. It can free you from it can free you from the high blood pressure. It can free you from blood sugar issues. It can free you from all sorts of physical abilities by letting it all go. All right. So that's anger, all right? Now, fear. Fear is something comes zapping into you like kabang. All of a sudden, your nerves go woo-hoo-hoo, like electrical shock goes through you. Fear, all right. And it requires it's instant response. It doesn't rise up like a fire. This is like cold. Fear is cold and bitter and sharp. When you feel fear, you've got to look at the circumstances when it shows up in that way. Because when it shows up in that way, that's a message. If you feel fear chronically, that's a different kind of message. But we're talking about now in your daily life, you may encounter fear. Oh my gosh, what's going to happen now? Such and such just happened, and what's going to, you know, there's a fear. And so when you feel a fear, you recognize that you shrink. Your energy field goes, and you just get real small. You don't want to go there because your self-image shrinks too. And then you feel powerless. So what you want to do immediately, as soon as you feel fear, is you look around. Is there something you must absolutely do to save yourself in the moment? Most of the time, there isn't. Most of the time. If it's in a conversation with someone and all of a sudden you're being manipulated or controlled or threatened, then you've got to stand your ground somehow. You've got to deal with it. Your mind gets really sharp. Now, you may not be trained on knowing what to do about this, but if it's not urgent in the very moment, if the fear comes where you hear about somebody else doing this that threatens you, but they're not there standing in front of you threatening you, then you have a little bit of a leeway. And once you do the technique we're going to discuss with you, in the future, you'll have that technique and you can start doing it in your mind if you are really threatened in the immediate circumstance with somebody. But if you don't have a good technique to shift fear, then you're stuck with whatever it is that your inner child can come up with in the moment. And it may not be really that good. Okay, so what you do to shift fear. And we're going again to Lazar's techniques because these are what enabled the channel to really clean out her emotional body. It was so stuck and so jammed, you know. So she did her clearings. It took her years, and she really cleaned up her childhood and her adolescence and so on. But what you can do is you can step through screens. In other words, you can imagine yourself, if you're in a situation where you just can get up and walk through a door to another room, you walk through that door, there's a screen there, and it will screen all the fear out of you, and you go in the next room, walk in the next room, minus your fear. That's what you think. What you feel and think inside your mind is what will determine what your body perceives as real. Okay? So if you imagine yourself being free of the fear as you walk through the door, then your body will say, oh, okay, and will start to reorient immediately. Now, if you do that technique, or if you do it, you can do it mentally too. You can walk through a door mentally. And it's just like a screen door. You can walk right through a screen door and it'll screen it right out. If you do, whether you do it mentally or physically get up and walk into another room, what you do is you turn around and you look at the door, and it's like in cartoons where they go through a wall and they leave a hole that's just the shape of the cartoon character. It's like that in reverse. There's the screen, and then there's this kind of blobby stuff in your shape, which is the fear left on the screen. And then what you do is you go back to it and mentally just kind of roll it up into a ball, and you can give it to your higher self. You can give it to your guides. You can give the fear away. If you're in the moment, like if you're driving in traffic and somebody pulls in front of you and you don't, and you have to use your wits to avoid a serious accident, you don't have time to do this kind of thing. That's the real fear. And that's the fear that after it's over, you sit there, you missed it by just a few inches. Oh my gosh, I almost went off the hill or almost hit the truck or whatever. And you're like, but after a while, you're in a little bit of shock. And so you're a little numb for a while. But after a while, it all calms out. Okay, so that's the real fear. You don't really have to process that unless you find yourself driving now and so skitterish because what if a truck should pull in front of me? What if I get too close to the edge of there's a 500-foot drop down there? What if, you know, if you start getting anxious and worried and nervous and what if, then that's a fear you need to shift. And you can process and shift it and walk through the fear. Now, if your fear is that somehow or another you're going to fail, that's anxiety. If you fear that, and fear has to do with nervousness, agitation, any kind of freak out, any kind of butterflies in the stomach, all those kinds of energies, if you're feeling fear energies in your body, you can shift it out by the screen method. And if you need something that's even faster, once you've done the screen method for a while, you can just kind of go through a whole bunch of screens, boom, 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 and you can go in your mind and just shake it out, shake it out, shake it out. You can do that also. And that takes a few seconds. And that will start shifting your body too, to say, oh, okay, fear. Okay, we're dealing with fear. Now, if you're afraid you're going to fail, this is this comes from shame. This is a fear that bubbles up from shame. And it's a fear that's very useful to the inner slave driver because they can use this fear to get your ass moving. You're going to fail if you don't get your ass up and go do this. Bad things are going to happen to you. So you can get manipulated very well by fear. And so if you have a fear of failure, a lot of people have fear of failure. It's very common. And a lot of people have, oddly enough, a fear of success too. If you succeed, oh my God, oh my God, I don't know if I can handle that. There's too much pressure on me to keep it up. There's too much pressure to continue succeeding. Oh my, how am I going to handle that? And if I really succeed well, all these people are going to come and want something from me. How am I going to handle my success? Now, fear of failure, that's probably familiar. You've probably failed before. And so the fear of failure is, oh my gosh, I'm going to go and feel bad. I'm going to go down in shame. I'm going to feel shamed. I'm going to feel unworthy, unlovable. I'm going to feel inadequate. I'm going to feel stupid. I'm going to feel a real schmuck. I'm going to be a failure. Oh my gosh, I don't deserve to live. Oh dear, oh dear. And you don't want to go there. And that's what that anxiety is about. And you don't trust that you can stay out of that shame place. So how do you deal with that fear? That's an anxiety. Okay. If you will find that underneath that kind of fear or that kind of anxiety, you will feel some game that you play with yourself. You'll find anger maybe under there. Really, really find anger that you don't want to deal with the anger, so hey, let's just play with the fear. Everybody has their favorite, their chosen bad emotion, okay? Some people just go for anger all the time. They're all always hostile, angry, upset, irritable, impatient. They'll go that way. And then there are others who are always go to the fear response and anxiety and terrors and insomnia and oh my gosh, mind is racing. What am I going to do? What am I going to do? What am I going to do? And worry, lots of worry. Underneath it all, there's going to probably be guilt. There's probably going to be some anger. There's probably going to be, there may be some, there's going to be shame in there. There's going to be you feel, you being a martyr victim and feeling sorry for yourself could be in there. And those things you go to as a way to get away from other things. It's like you have this field of play in your emotional body. And if you don't like this emotion, you choose that one. And that emotion, that state is easier for you to cope with. Like self-pity, for example, it's a state. It's not an emotion. Guilt is really a state. And states, as we said before, these are static. They're not in flow. They're identification points. So if you go into self-pity, you go into a numb self place. You numb yourself down. You think that's going to quiet everything down. That's the freeze response. Okay, you quiet everything down. But if you go in there and then, but if you start to feel anxious about failure and then you start feeling jealous and envious of other people who succeed and so on, well, then you've got anger to deal with. That's something else. You got maybe resentment. You've got, and so on, or blame of other people who've held you back and kept you from being successful. You may go into the blame mode. Okay. So there's all sorts of little avenues and channels that you pick up during your childhood and adolescence that can take you to other bad emotional states, but yet somehow or another they're more doable than what you've experienced, than this anxiety or fear. You won't do anything to get out of anxiety. You'll do just about anything. You'll even go blank. You'll even go just not tune into your reality at all. Just, oh no, I'm just not going to deal with it at all. I'm just going to run away from it. So that's the flight. So, or you're going to go in the freeze. I'm just going to shut down and this is too much. I'm going to give it up. I'm going to give it away now. I'm going to say, okay, I'm afraid I'm going to fail. I can't take the pressure of the competition. I can't take the pressure, the horrible shame that would come with a failure. So I'm going to stop here. I'm not even going to make any more effort. I'm going to just stop. I'm going to go run and hide. I'm just going to shut down and I'm going to do something else with my life. And a lot of people go there. So you have a lot of options. Now, every time you encounter emotion, you have two or three choices that you can make. You can go and deal directly with it and clear it and express it, and release it. In fear, you can do that too. You can go in your imagination and go to what the ultimate fear would be in your life. Like, let's say that you're homeless and living on the street and eating food out of garbage cans. Okay, something, go there and then think about, okay, so... I'm here, but a lot of people have been here and survived and changed things and whatever, so what would I do? And if you can go into kind of a plan of action, maybe the fear just will go away. But you want to look at, okay, what are your strategies? Where do you go when you're afraid? Where do you go in your mind when you're angry? And recognize that these strategies will always be there. So, first of all, you can, of the two or three possibilities, you can go and deal with it directly. That'd be the fight. Or you can run away from it, avoid it, not deal with it at all. Or you can do the freeze, which means Oh, it really wasn't a problem to begin with. There's no issue there. I'm just going to go do some, look at my life somewhere else, and I'm going to mobilize my energy somewhere else. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. I'm going to go there. I'm going to just forget it. You can do all sorts of things. But every choice that you make at every choice point creates a reality, determines your life track. So when you're dealing with your emotions, if you will put it in your hopper just to think about it, just to orient yourself this way, when you feel emotion, a fear or an anger, anxiety, whatever you feel there of those two, then what you want to do is to process it, express it, release it, process it, clear it as soon as you can. Make that choice. If you can't do it right on the spot, make the choice, okay, when I get home tonight, I'm going to sit down, I'm going to clear this whole thing out. Be sure to clear it out before you go to bed. Try to clear it out before you eat food. The reason we say this is because a lot of people are upset. They eat, it stuffs it down into your body. It puts it down into your abdomen. And then it's harder to find it and harder to release it once you've eaten a meal. That's a reason a lot of people eat comfort foods, right? So, okay, I feel all this sad, I feel all this sadness and pain and so on. And I'm going to eat my comfort food. Oh, I feel better. But the body after says, more sugar? Oh, no. But in the meantime, whatever you felt bad about has shifted into something else, and you have a little bit of a break. And then it comes back, and you go through the cycle again. You want to clear so you don't keep going through cycles. If you make the choice to process and release, that's the best choice of all the choices that you have. Why? Because that's your track home. That's your track to the divine. That's your track to love. The others are just, okay, sidetracks. Okay, we'll go over here for a while. We'll go over there for a while. We'll try that for a little bit. We'll do that. We'll do that. We'll do that. You're not really, you're wandering off your track. You're wandering off your path a little bit. Sometimes a lot. Sometimes it takes people years to get back on the path, right? But if you can think of this, every choice point you have when dealing with an emotion, choose the one to process, express, release, and heal. Okay? And that will take you faster and more delightfully and more joyfully through your life to home, which is God, God is all that is. The oneness, the love, the unconditional love. And now there's hurt. And we wanted to specifically talk about hurt in the sense that it's not fast to do hurt, to clear hurt, to process and release it. But again, this is another fabulous Lazarus technique that we recommend to everybody. But most people tend to forget to do this too. But hurt is sometimes when you're diminished by someone else or by circumstances. It's similar to feeling like you're a failure. And it's similar to self-pity, but it isn't failure or self-pity. Okay? Hurt is essentially, it's like you were attacked or your physical body is feeling it. You have heaviness on your chest, your heart aches, your body aches, you feel that you're carrying a heavy load. There's a physical hurt component. It's in your physical body. And so the way to deal with hurt is this. You can clear hurt in like a couple of weeks if you really focus on it. But it's not like fear and anger fear can be shifted in 5 minutes. Anger can be cleared in 5 minutes. And then you might have to go through more cycles of it, but they'll never be as intense as the original one. You just have to keep doing it because it gets the flow going. And the flow is like a spiral. You come back to the same point just above, you're going to hit the same energy again, and you're going to need to process it again and go around the spiral. There it'll be again, and it'll be again. And the spirals will get longer and bigger and bigger. And so as you expand, all right, and so it becomes less and less, and you don't identify with the pain anymore or the fear or the anger. And voila, you know, after a while, you can process fears and angers that come in during your day, and you don't get stressed out. You don't get have to crash at the end of your day or at the end of your week. You're not overloaded. You're not overwhelmed. You're not like burdened by but all the things that you've got to do and pressure. You can do that, but with hurt is inward. Hurt is felt inward. It's not something you can move outward with, okay? So in order to do hurt, you need to spend some time with yourself. The positive side of hurt, believe it or not, exists. And that is that when you are hurt, it is an opportunity for you to see how to nurture and love yourself. Not that you can't do that with any other emotion, but hurt is specifically designed for you to love your body, to love yourself, to nurture you, to take care of you, to be kind to you, and to heal you, to lift you. Now, hurt can occur in mourning, like when you've lost somebody. There can be hurt there. If you feel that somehow or another this person or pet animal, if you take it personally, if your ego is into this, you'll see the universe is doing this to me. I can't take any more loss. I can't take this anymore. Yeah, there's hurt in there. There's sorrow. Maybe you didn't do enough for whoever died. Maybe you were inadequate in that, and so there's some shame creeping in. But overall, hurt is a self-diminishment that is triggered by external circumstances. And some people, when they lose a loved one, they're not really self-diminished. They kind of, it's a high stress, and they can go down into freeze mode. And they can kind of shut down, and some people just shut down for a period of time, and then eventually they'll shake off like the little deer and get back into life. Some people never get out of freeze. Okay, so then there's, but for hurt, if you're feeling hurt, like you've been rejected by someone you trusted or that you cared about, who undermined you, who diminished you, it could be shock and trauma with it as well. What you do is that you set aside some time to be alone with yourself without any interruptions. And generally, you do about maybe 15 minutes. You can put, you have to have a little timer. You time it for about 15 minutes, maybe 10 minutes. Try 10 minutes for the first time or something, maybe, play with it. And you have it, it'll go beep, beep, beep at, you know, when the time is over. So now you don't have to look at the clock. You're not going to answer the phone. You make sure that your phone is off. You don't hear any ring, no buzz, nothing. And you put a do not disturb sign on your, you know, front door or whatever. You basically say, okay, this is just for me. No interaction with anybody else. No response to anybody else. So, and if you live with a bunch of people, then it'll have to be your room. Or if it's your whole apartment or your house or whatever, you do whatever you know, it depends on what size it is. But whatever it is, when you do that 10 minutes, you sit down on something soft, maybe the sofa or the bed or in a soft chair or something like that, and you just start feeling the pain in your body. You tune into your body first. You feel where you hurt in your body. You feel your heart hurt. You feel your intestines hurting. You feel your body just feel the heaviness and the pain, and you're feeling psychic pain as well. It's not just physical pain. There's psychic pain. You just tune into the psychic pain. And you just feel the hurt. You feel the hurt. Do not go into self-pity. Do not think about who hurt you and go into blame or try to psychoanalyze them. That's all mental yama yama. Don't do that. Don't go into any sidetracks. Just stay with the hurt. Now, you may want to cry. Cry. You may feel a need to kind of curl up in a fetal position. Do so. You may feel need to go on the floor and lie on the floor and roll around and moan. Do it. Do whatever your body needs. Your body's got to express it. This is not something you can do in a visualization. Your body's got to express it in its own way. It's got to move it out. Now, don't do it deliberately, like, okay, I'm going to do some yoga and some dance moves. I'm going to do this and move it out. No. You have to let your body speak to you. The body will tell you how it wants to release the hurt. And it may be very little movement, may surprise you. It may be a lot of movement, and it may surprise you. So let yourself just roll with it, just be there, and just keep your focus on staying out of all the sidetracks. And then it goes beep, beep, beep. And as soon as it goes beep, 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 you stop. You just stop. And you say, oh, okay. All right, body, heal. Heal yourself, body. I love you. I love you. Heal, body. Heal. And then, and this is the a very important part of it, is then you go and do something positive for yourself. You probably set it up prior to doing this, you know, this process. But maybe you go and you have a really great nature show you want to watch, and you've recorded it, and so as soon as you like, oh, I'm going to get my juice, and I'm going to sit at the TV and kick back, and I'm watching it. Or maybe it's doing a bubble bath, or maybe it's reading a good book, or maybe it's taking a walk by the beach or in the woods or something. Something that feels good to you. Don't do any comfort foods, but maybe there is something that you would like that would feel nourishing for you. Some chicken soup for the soul kind of thing. Maybe there's something that would feel nourishing. So we would recommend that maybe you do that if that feels right for you. But do something that's positive and self-loving and enjoyable for you. But it's all by yourself, really. It's just about you being with you, okay? And then once that's over, then that's over. Now, as far as timings on all of these techniques, for the hurt, which we've just done, we would recommend doing it 2 to 3 times a week for 2 weeks, and maybe once in the third week, and maybe once in the fourth week, but you can see where you stand with it and see how your body is feeling, okay? So that would be what we would recommend for a big hurt. Now, for anger, you're going to have more angers come around. It's not like this is going to be it. This is going to be the last anger I ever feel. No. So what you want to do is you want to do, maybe if you're going to do this technique of telling them off, blowing them up, forgiving them, you want to do that maybe about the same thing. Maybe you want to do it two or three days in a row, and then maybe every third or fourth day for a while. And then maybe not. You may find that after about 3 days of doing it, 1, 2, 3 days in a row, oh, I'm clear. I feel free. Then you don't have to do any more. Okay? And again, it's once you get the hang of it, it doesn't take very long. Sometimes it only takes 5 minutes. And you can squeeze 5 minutes into your schedule. Right? With fear, fear is generally over. It's generally over. You don't have to do it multiple times. So, but do the screens. If it keeps coming up, the same fear keeps coming up, even after the incident is over, then you might have another issue you want to deal with. You might be angry, so you might want to go and switch over to anger. Or you may feel that you just, or you may be dipping into shame. That, I just don't know what to do about this. I'm very inadequate in my response to it. Oh, yeah, if you go into shame or hurt or fear, shame, hurt, and fear and anger, if you keep going into these, and so it becomes chronic cycles for you, then you're getting something out of it. Now, you want to get something positive out of it, i.e., you want to learn about yourself, take your power back, become a free being, lift beyond the shame and beyond all the pain, and lift up into connection with your greater self, expanding your self-image. That's what you want to do. So make good use of it. But if you find that you have some kind of payoff, that it makes you feel superior, or your ego's into it, and like, I'm better than, or whatever, or it's an identity of you always being the sensitive one, or you being on the fringe, or you never being loved and accepted, it's validating some limited self-image of yourself, then you've got a little bit more work to do in expanding your self-image and clearing that so that you don't get bogged down in all of that. Okay? So those are the techniques we're going to work with, and in the meditation today we're going to work with the fear and the anger. We're really not going to do much with the hurt, because that is, like we said, it takes 2-3 weeks. We can't do that, but we can do an anger and we can do a fear, and that's what we're going to do in the meditation. Now, just remember that you don't hold any ego judgment about emotions. There's nothing wrong with emotions. Okay? There's just accept them. Accept your emotions. It's okay for you to feel whatever you're feeling. Even if you're feeling shame, let it be okay for you to feel shame. Don't judge yourself and say, because then that just puts you into more self-hatred or whatever. I'm being inadequate now in dealing with all of this. I can't deal with my emotion. Blah, blah, blah. Don't go there. That is really not the direction you need to go. Don't go smaller, okay? Go larger. Go more expansive. Go more towards the love, not towards, judging. Okay, judging makes everything small. Don't judge other people. Don't judge yourself. Don't judge your feelings. There's no right or wrong here. They are just feelings. They're your feedback. Feedback on your path home. Feedback to tell you what options you've got to move forward to the divine and move into greater love. They're always an opportunity for you. All right. And some other time we will do the shame release. In the meantime, we do have a love and healing evening on releasing shame, which we could recommend that you may want to listen to. And by the time that we have come out with a shame workshop, those of you who watch this workshop are like, well, but you already did a shame workshop. Okay, great. Well, then go do that one. All right, so what we're going to do now is we're going to take a 10-minute break. And so you, those of you online as well, watching the video, you take a little break too. Just get a little state break, walk around, have some water, whatever. Go to the bathroom, whatever you need to do. Just kind of get yourself into just kind of relax, rest, kind of a state break. And we'll come back in 10 minutes and we will answer your questions. Okay, and then from there we will go into the meditation. So for now, we surround you with light and love. We'll be back in 10. Farewell.